January 10th. When a sociopath crosses the line into psychopathy, or is a psychopath the same as a sociopath? So from what I have learned, a sociopath is someone that has certain traits that are close to a psychopath, but the difference, I guess, is in the execution of their plan, so to speak, from my personal opinion. A sociopath will definitely be more impulsive. Their impulses drive them. They'll readily say, oh, but so-and-so made me do it, so-and-so, this and that. They don't think things through. While psychopaths tend to pride themselves on being smarter than everyone else, so consequently, they're more calculating in how they approach pretty much everything they do to people, right? Because they're better. I mean, since July of the previous year, when I was first physically assaulted by my then boyfriend, I never dreamed I'd find myself so fucking shattered. I mean, I've been assaulted, harassed, humiliated, stalked, raped, stripped of my sense of self, my internal compass completely broken. This man used tactics on me I had never even heard of, or let alone experienced firsthand. Some of those tactics, or crazy-making schemes, those things can be extremely terrifying because they're meant to put you off balance. They're meant for you to continue walking on eggshells, to not know, as I said before, which end is up. I mean, I remember many times when I would sit and just question my own sanity. Fuck, am I going crazy? Am I deserving? Like, what's happening? It just felt for the longest time that I'd just been skinned alive and just left there. That's what it felt like. I mean, I'm not quite sure even when. Even if there is some kind of bell that goes off in that person's head, like that they start off as a sociopath and naturally turn into a psychopath. One thing I'm sure of is by the time you think something might be wrong, it's too late. And I guess that's kind of how it happened for me. By the time my gut, although I admit I wasn't very good at listening to myself, I mean, I was a people pleaser. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be accepted. And I didn't think I was anything, really. But I was. So the fucking crazy making. Yeah. Now, one of the things I personally experienced, again, I'm not a professional, I'm just somebody who went through it, like so many others. So I guess one of the things that set these creatures apart from the rest of us is how they see themselves. Most sociopaths and psychopaths intensely believe that they're important, that they're some kind of hot shit. They see themselves like the sun. Everything has to revolve around them. Now, one good example is those conversations from hell or like black hole vortex. Oh my God. And that pretty much characterizes any type of interaction you're going to have with them. And please do keep in mind, when you engage in conversation with these creatures, it doesn't matter. It's always going to be your fault. It's always going to be your shortcomings. Yeah, because those are so much more obvious than the sociopaths, because he doesn't have any flaws. They're perfect, right? They're fucking perfect. So there's a little known but widely used tactic is when you try to explain to them, let's say, I don't know, you come home, you just want to have a normal life, right? You just want to come home and talk about this problem you experienced at work with some other person, right? Then all of a sudden, he's going to put words in your mouth. He's going to twist everything and say, oh, so now you're Miss Perfect now. Oh, so I'm the bad person, huh? So this is the vortex. It slowly happens like that. You just want to talk about the shitty day you've had at work. But the way they go about making you think that this was all your fault to begin with, basically this tactic, this shit, enables them to basically squash any kind of right you might have thought, you know, your thoughts, your emotion, that you're entitled to those, right? No, you're not allowed, because whatever I'm going to say, whatever I'm feeling, if I'm wrong, I'm at fault, and I should just shut up. And mind you, during these fucked up tactics, the conversation always goes back to them, because they have a sense of importance, self-importance, right? And this kind of tactic over time, like, it's just gonna instill in you like a sense of guilt, right? Like, how dare, oh my God, how dare I even think about other people when my man over here, oh my God, like, he's devastated. He cannot listen to this. So it's crazy making. And boundaries? Holy fuck, don't think about having boundaries. No. There's no boundaries. There's no respect. And I remember one time I was searching for my keys, like most people, I guess, right? We all tend to repetitiously do things like where we put our keys when we first walk in our house, right? These are all these little habit things we do, right? So I was searching for my keys because they weren't there where I usually put them. Now, douchebag would always laugh at me and say that I was crazy and stupid because I couldn't find my keys, and without him, I would be nothing. And I guess I had started to believe that, right? But the thing is, though, He's the one that had hidden my keys. One word, psychopath, sociopath, right? That's their motivation. That's who they are. Because why else? I mean, there's no rhyme or reason why somebody would purposely hide your things and then look at you and say, well, fuck, you really are stupid, aren't you? You can't even remember where you put your shit. Fuck, maybe you should go talk to somebody about that. Those were some of the conversations, some of the things that I would be told over and over and over again. And believe me, over a very, very short period of time, you start to believe that you are crazy. He would constantly play these games with me. And at one point, you believe it. They break you down. This is part of their MO. Right? Now, another time when I needed to have a surgery, he was so attentive, you know, like it was actually nice. It felt, I don't know, normal. Yeah. No. I'd found out later, because there was something, you see, while I was recovering from my surgery in the hospital, one nurse, like, one time I had asked her, I'm like, when do you think I'll be able to get up and start walking, right? And she would snap at me and be like, what the fuck do you think this is? Like a 5-star hotel? You don't get to do what you want here. Just be quiet. I don't even know what the fuck that was all about, but I remember thinking, oh, she must be having a bad day. Because that's another thing I was good at, making excuses for other people's bad behavior, right? But then I accidentally found out later that he's the one that would tell the nurses that I was crazy and I was delusional, and not to let me get away with nothing, because he was talking with my psychiatrist, which I didn't have one, but he was telling them that he was trying with my psychiatrist to have me committed because I was completely delusional. But they needed to prove that, because they couldn't just put me in a psych ward because I was an adult, right? I mean, let that sink in for a little bit when you find out that somebody's saying and doing these things. I mean, it's been well over a decade and I still cannot wrap my head around what the fuck. What the fuck was that? I mean, this was crazy. And I even remember too, like, especially at that time, like, I just couldn't figure it out. I was literally thinking that, yeah, I've snapped. I've snapped. Now, another time I remember too, that he was telling me that my mother was crazy. And he had told me, oh, you know, your mother's just been saying like a lot of bad shit about you. And I mean, it was no, sure, I was deemed a black sheep. And, but my mother wasn't as far as this psychopath, right? And then he told me one day, he said, oh, your mother says you're bipolar. And I looked at him and I'm like, what? I'm not bipolar. You know that. And then I'm like, well, fuck, like, okay, let's, next time we go there, I'm gonna have it. Oh, no, don't. Oh God, I'm so sorry. I told you, just don't talk to your mother about it. Just let it go. Just ignore her. We're just not gonna visit her or talk to her anymore. And I remember after a couple of weeks, like it just kept gnawing at me. It's like, why the hell would my mother say that? Yeah, that's a whole different episode. And I remember confronting my mother about this and saying, hey, he said that you're saying I'm bipolar and to stop contacting you because, you don't want to aggravate me because I'm dangerous? What? So you see, all these things are very crazy. And even if many times I thought I was dumb for thinking it, I'm not dumb. Even that time, my mother said, oh, what are you talking about? He told me you're bipolar and I shouldn't talk to you anymore because you need to be put in an institution to get treatment. So I remember looking at my mother saying, what? No, I'm not. You see these people, whether it's a sociopath or a psychopath, they're good at mimicking emotions, mimicking what is normal, what is deemed a normal reaction, right? They become good at imitating normal people. They lack everything that makes a person human, in my opinion. And unfortunately, the more you know these people, the more you realize, yeah, they've had some kind of bad trauma in their life. But there's also quite a lot of people dealing with childhood trauma that don't end up abusing others, terrorizing others, raping others. These kinds of tactics are normal for these people. This is, they don't have the same thought process a normal person has. There's a disconnect in the brain, in my view, because I mean, I could never think of telling, of doing things like this, of saying things like this. Like, I couldn't, really. So whether, again, personal opinion, so whether sociopaths or psychopaths are different or the same, one thing is for sure that I found, they're both dangerous, extremely toxic, and it's best to get the fuck away from them, first chance you get. So let's talk about the different types we may encounter. What's your type? Most abusers, more like all of them, if you ask me, they have a definite personality disorder among other crazy traits. Now, the most common personality disorder falls under the category of cluster B personality disorder, which can be associated or paired up to a sociopath, right? Again, personal experience, personal research, and yeah, I've had plenty of therapy to get over that. So again, personal opinion, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm just somebody that went through it and experienced it firsthand. You want to fault me for that? F you. I don't got time for you. Now, cluster B personality disorders are characterized by a dramatic, overly emotional, or unpredictable thinking or behavior, right? They include antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, histrionic, and narcissistic. Those are part of the cluster B personality disorder. Now, here's a quick little recap, not a recap, but an explanation. What I've learned so far about these different types. Charmer number one, the antisocial. He's got a complete disregard for others. Persistent lying, stealing, always in trouble with the law. Repeatedly violates other people's rights. Very aggressive and can often have a lot of violent behavior. And they completely disregard the safety of themselves and especially others. Charmer number two, the borderline. They're very impulsive. They engage a lot in risky behavior. They always make the relationship very volatile. Their moods are extremely unstable. They exhibit a lot of suicide. They have a lot of suicidal behavior, idealization. They fear of being alone. And they constantly swing from idolizing to demonizing the person, the people, the person they're with. Now, charmer number three, the histrionic. This type, they constantly seek out attention. Attention has to be on them. Remember the other episode? They think they're the sun. Everything and everyone has to revolve around them because only they are the only important person. They're excessively emotional. Extreme sensitivity to others' approval. I mean, they don't, you wouldn't think they seek other people's approval, but they do. They need it. Their moods are unstable, and they have this excessive concern with their physical appearance, right? And I'm not just talking, oh, crap, look, my hair is just a little bit out of whack. No. I'm talking excessive concern with their physical appearance. Everything has to look perfect because they see themselves as perfect. So the outer shell must reflect that. Charmer number four, excuse me, the narcissistic. They love fantasizing about the power and success, his own attractiveness, how wonderful they are. They love to exaggerate their talents, their achievements. They constantly do that. They have this expectation of constant praise and admiration from others. They need it. And obviously, they constantly fail to recognize that other people have feelings or emotions or even boundaries. So when I learned all this, this was in group therapy, I believe. By this time, I had left him quite a while ago. He was at a remand center awaiting trial slash sentencing. So I was heavily into therapy after what had happened to me. So this was one of them because I actually, like three times a week, I had two separate sessions. I don't know, one I'll call regular. The second one was for sexual abuse. And the third was a group, learning about abuse, learning about me, let me just say that for explanation's sake here, There was something in me that made me prone to fall for people like that, right? There was a lot of things, I mean, that I needed to sort through. And I'm not blaming myself because none of this is my fault. Just like any other woman going through something like this, it's not your fault. But we do have specific behaviors or upbringings, false beliefs that make us more prone to fall for people like that, right? So, anyways, when I learned about this cluster B personality disorder thing, all the four different kinds, right, within that category, I remember sitting back on the couch going, holy fuck, I've hit the jackpot. Because I was realizing that douchebag was a mix of all of these four. Wow. That was kind of scary. And I remember asking the therapist, can this be true? Can one person be all four of this cluster B personality disorder? Like, can this person be all four? And she looked at me. And she goes, unfortunately, yes, a lot of them are. Especially the older they get, no treatment, no. It's kind of like the bell curve, right? That sometimes we look at. Obviously, the top, middle, like everything to the left is before, like all the accumulated traumas and this and that. And then this person's on the top of the, on the top. And then, but once it starts going back down on the other side, like a lot of times, there's a point of no return that this person has been like this way too long. Like there's nothing. There's nothing that can fix these people like that. It's literally a point of no return. Sure, you can medicate people all you want, but you cannot take these disorders out of the person, right? You can regulate with medication, but yeah, you can't fix that. So at first, I remembered, like, fuck, jackpot, he's all four. Holy shit. And at first, like when I met him, he swept me off my feet. He was very charming. But I guess it was more like love bombing, when I look back. And love bombing is a term that's been being thrown around, with a lot of stuff. It's when a person, they get that, like, they really try too hard to get in your good graces. There's these over-the-top displays of love, and like they just love bomb you. Like they just do all kinds of, oh, she's gonna like me. She's gonna, oh, she's gonna, like it's nonstop, nonstop, nonstop. You literally feel like you're being swept off your feet. More like being sucked into a black hole of destruction, but hey, there's love mixed in. Yeah, I know, I'm just being, bitchy about it, because there's nothing good in there. So this love bombing, then the relationship moves really fast, like fast into commitment, soulmate style, like, ooh, we're soulmates, we're destined to be together. And then you're fucked. You're fucked, basically. Because by the time you realize you're fucked, it's already too late. You're fucked. You're stuck. You're caught in his net. And whatever happens next is best described by a psychologist called Dale Archer. He's the one that said it by illustrating the phases of love bombing, right? With a psychopath, right? This comes from a psychologist, right? Because there's actual research been done out there. So, kudos, Dale Archer. So the phases, there is four phases of love bombing, according to him. Idealization, devaluation, discard, and repeat. So the idealization phase of love bombing, they're maximizing the good traits and minimizing the faults, right? For them, for you, right? Everything is peachy keen, rainbows and unicorns, love, 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 love. Everything is good, everything is beautiful, yay, right? Then comes the devaluation, right? That's a big word, right? We usually associate that word with a house, with something, right? Fuck. So devaluation, making sure they want to make sure you know how worthless you really are in their eyes, right? Then they discard you. They no longer desire you, even though they've professed their love over and over and over and over. Yeah, no. You're worthless to them now. And then they repeat, they take it back from the top. So after they devalue, they discard you like you're some kind of piece of crap. Because even in the love bombing phase, that they're idolizing you, they're, oh, everything, oh my God, you're so amazing, you're wonderful. No, they don't think it. They say it because they know somehow, somewhere. It's almost like they sense it. That deep down, you don't see yourself as these wonderful things, right? It's almost like they smell it. And then they use that against you, right? So, funny thing with all of this is that, look, obviously, I'm looking back here over a decade ago. He did offer insight as to what was really underneath all that charm of his, right? I just wasn't listening. Well, no, I was listening. I wasn't paying attention to what was happening. I was being selective, right? Because I wanted so much to believe it, then all the little red flags I ignored, which is a normal thing for anybody. I mean, I loved the attention when the love bombing was happening, right? Who wouldn't? So, from the time we had met, things progressed really fast, like fast, lightning fast. Within a month, he was already staying with me at my place because, come to find out, is home was other people's couches. He used to couch surf. He didn't have like a place of his own. He stayed with people here and there. He also showed me numerous times his disrespect and loathing for people, for other people that seemed to have it all in life, including me. Right? Like he would make parallels with my life and how the fact that I had an education certainly didn't mean that I was smart. Like he would belittle people for having a beautiful home, for having a nice car, for having a great job. It's weird because it felt like as if he wanted those things by simply insinuating himself into that life instead of doing like most of these people do, which is work hard for the things they have. Right? Saving, achieving something. He just wanted it. And his sense of entitlement was always front and center. He would also lie, cheat, steal, name it. He'd be up for it. and never made apologies for being like that either, because, I mean, instead he would blame society for what he was. It was always someone else's fault. He deserved. Never mind that Joe Blow neighbor just bought himself a brand new truck. Oh, fucking motherfucker. Well, I'm just going to take his truck. I'm just going to fucking slash the goddamn tires on that shit. He don't deserve that shit. I deserve to have that truck, not him. Right? That's how his mind used to work. I mean, in the course of 1 year, there was also something very, very disturbing with this person. I know I referred to him as douchebag. That was a name that came up and stuck. Yeah. So, whatever. In the course of 1 year, he had tried to commit suicide about 6 times because I would hint about leaving him. And then he knew my weaknesses better than me. And he never hesitated to use that to his advantage. I mean, he would even brag about having the ability to spot and smell a person's faults and use it to his benefit. Always. That was a source of pride for him to be like that. He would also show me every now and then how sensitive he could be. Yeah. But that always came with a double-edged sword. He would say to me how lucky he was that someone like me loved him, even though I wasn't that great to begin with. Crazy making. I mean, I could go on and on about riding that crazy roller coaster. I fell into a trap, plain and simple. I was at a low point in my life after my divorce. And I guess I was an easy prey for someone like that. I don't know. Maybe there was something in me at that time that I just thought I could save the world one crazy person at a time. January 12th, theory versus syndrome. A theory is an idea or a set of ideas that's intended to explain facts or events. A syndrome is a set of concurrent things, whether it's emotions or actions, that usually form an identifiable pattern. Learned helplessness is a theory that was put forth by Martin Seligman at the end of the 60s. His theory was largely based on inhumane animal experiments. How interesting. Learned helplessness is when people feel helpless to avoid negative situations because previous experience has shown them that they got no control over the situation, right? So basically, this theory of learned helplessness used animals that were caged with no possibility of escaping electrical shocks that came from the very floor they would walk or sit on. Every time these animals would try to flee, they would get shocked. So with these shocks, the animals were taught over time that no matter what they did, where they tried to go, all of it was pointless. They would get shocked from below. Even with a way out, with the door of their cages wide open, escape was pointless because they were taught to believe they were trained that they would get continuously shocked if they moved. So they understood that they no longer had control over this harmful situation they were in, so they simply opted to remain submissive as a means of survival. Right? This very theory is the basis for the battered woman's syndrome, which was largely discussed in the 70s and used as a defense for women killing their abusers. This syndrome is very much parallel to the learned helplessness theory. A person experiencing a cycle of abuse is conditioned over time to feel powerless. That feeling of being both responsible for and feeling completely helpless to stop the violence, which eventually results in being passive and depressed. So this learned depression and passivity make it hard for the abused person to muster up the courage they need in order to leave. Over time, prolonged abuse is going to cause a person to become afraid to feel their own needs, resulting in complete submission towards the abuser, not to mention the shame and the guilt associated with being stuck in a situation like that. So, unless you've walked in those shoes like I have, please refrain from expressing a misinformed view as to why women don't leave their abusers. I personally get it. And if you think it's as simple as a walk in the park, it's not. January 13th. What's wrong with me? Nothing. I'm learning right now that indeed nothing is wrong with me. Doesn't feel like it. My main problem is letting my heart think more than my head. I discovered through therapy I have a need to please, as well as help others, nurture others. That doesn't sound so bad, does it? Yeah. Well, it can be a bad thing when you come in contact with a sociopathic abusers. Core beliefs and values, we all have them, right? They're like an internal map telling us how to behave and react to life. Some of those beliefs change, obviously, as we mature, and some remain buried in our subconscious. We come to conclusions as children, right, that are largely based on what we see, hear, and experience. We form a set of core beliefs about who we are, what we are, and the world around us and our place in it, right? If as a child I experienced negative things, which I did plenty of, chances are I believed it because I saw it, I experienced it. As a child, I was taught that in order to be loved, I had to be nice. If I did not do as I was told, I wasn't nice, and then I would not be loved. Another example is having grown in a family where the dad is the breadwinner, mom stayed home. So in my child's mind, it was perfectly normal for a man to control the money in the house. It was also normal for a mom to cater to her husband because that was her duty because she was a stay-at-home mom. Those beliefs have changed for me, obviously. But I guess some fragments have remained buried deep that I didn't know were there, really. I was told that by looking at those core beliefs, I could actually change those patterns in me. Right? You know, the kinds of patterns that make me choose a loser as a mate, right? So the conscious mind is about the thinking, rationalizing, can't even talk, while the subconscious mind is more about the feeling, the emotion, and everything, right? Stuff we can't see readily. So if I start picking at those beliefs, I might just be able to release or change some of those negative, self-defeating beliefs that I've grown to accept as reality in my life, right? Now, here's a great example how core beliefs can influence a person later on in life, right? Because these core beliefs, you build them when you're young. Everybody remembers Barbie, right? That doll that every child basically was playing with as a kid. Like, Barbie was a very popular toy. It's a very small example, but a very potent one. So for me, the message sent was that in order to be accepted by society, I needed to look a certain way. Well-groomed, 36, 24, 36, the only jobs, could be a mom, a nurse, you know, woman work, right? Nowhere in there would you have entertained the idea that Barbie could be a mechanic, right? Because today, in 2024, there's a lot of women mechanics. Heck, I can even change my oil in my car. That's an achievement. I just don't want to do it, but I can do it if I have to. Unknowingly, we bought those beliefs. Just about a toy. Then a little bit later on, like in the 70s, because in the 50s, 60s, Barbie was huge, 70s too. Then the model, I'm sure some people might remember, her name was Twiggy. Very self-explanatory. Twiggy. To me, her message was, you know, you need to be super thin in order to be accepted, to be seen as, you know, the chiz type of thing. And you may not think that there's a lot of weight in that, but case in point, look at the generation of anorexics that followed. And I'm not just blaming that on that particular one, but the fact that we were shown these false beliefs, right? We were shown that was ingrained in us. Then a lot of women believed, oh my God, okay, so I need to look like that. Like, this is still going on to some degree today, based on these false images we look at, right? I mean, anyways, for boys, it was the same thing. The G.I. Joe, the Ken dolls, a boy has to be strong and manly and in charge, right? So, again, like I said, personal experience, my personal views, but don't be too quick to disregard the effects of those things you see, because they have a profound effect on children that look at that, right? There's also fear that plays a huge part. Fear of not being accepted, fear of being alone, fear of not being loved, fear of failure, fear of rejection. Feel free to pick your own fear. These fears or feelings live at the core. And how does that tie in with the abusers? Fear of being alone, right? Because that's a biggie. It's going to make you stay in a bad relationship because you don't want to be alone. Fear of rejection. Fear of rejection. Can't even talk. It might make me go above and beyond to please this person because I don't want him rejecting me. I don't want to be rejected. So each fear or negative is a potential that can be turned around into a positive. You just gotta look at those beliefs, those core beliefs, and honestly, and turn those into a positive. Now, I told Paula, my therapist, that okay, fine, we're gonna give this a try. I don't think you're onto anything good, but hey, I'm open. That's why I've got so much therapy. I got nowhere better to be. Fine, Paula, we'll try this. So all this stuff, right, that she's been guiding me through, all this shit feels so overwhelming. It's like all this stuff I have to relearn, it seems, to learn. I'm so thankful that she's there, right? She's teaching me because the crazy making, I mean, my wounds are still raw. I'm still dealing with a lot of PTSD. I mean, I have to be farther ahead in my therapy to explore other options and things like that. I still have panic attacks when I get in my truck and I see anything reminding me of that day. I mean, when I say panic attack, I mean, I can't breathe. I can't see because I'm crying, because I'm panicking. But I don't know, something just keeps pushing me. Keep going, keep going. You're learning something, keep going. I don't know, hopefully. I do want to learn all these things, but it's hard. It's hard because in between learning, everything is still fucked up. I still gotta go to court at least a couple times every other week because this is in two different courts in two different counties. I guess lesser charges in one county, more serious charges in the other. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I could do this. To have to relearn how to be a person. Relearning how to be a human being.